Okay, hello and welcome to this talk on how secure are commercial RISC-V CPUs. So we will answer this question today in this talk, but let's first introduce ourselves. So this is Lucas, I'm Fabian. We are both PhD students from CISPA in Germany. We are basically a big research institution. We do cybersecurity research and publish that at academic conferences. And yeah, with that we can already hop into basically CPU vulnerabilities. So what do we have there in that space? And you might know these two, Meltdown and Spectre. They were discovered in 2017 and then disclosed in 2018 to the public. And after that, a lot of other CPU vulnerabilities came to light, mostly on x86. But then at some point, people also discovered vulnerabilities on ARM as well. And this is still a thriving field where we do our research with vulnerabilities. Even here, StackWorp, we also published that one this month. You might have seen that as well. And now the question, given that x86 and ARM CPUs have these vulnerabilities, the question is, with RISC-V CPU, which is a new standard with new CPUs, can we learn from the mistakes that were done on ARM and x86? So can we design a secure architecture from the start, or will we repeat the same mistakes, both in the architecture, so the design, and also in the microarchitecture, so what is actually implemented? And we want to structure that talk basically in three different areas. So we'll first talk about side channels on RISC-V CPUs, then we will talk about actual CPU bugs, and then in the end we will also conclude with transit execution attacks. And with that, I pass it over to Lucas, who will talk about side channels.
Yeah, then let's start with a real side channel classic, which is RSA square and multiply to get to know what a side channel is. Maybe you can raise your hand if you know what a side channel is and how that works. Ah, nice, already many well-versed people here. So square and multiply is a really classic example of a software side channel, where in RSA you need to do exponentiation, and because exponentiation is expensive, you do that bit by bit with a nice modification that is called square and multiply, where your exponentiation basically gets shifted each time and you do a different operation depending on whether it's 1 or 0. And this is very bad because you do a branch in this operation, and this branch can then be observed by an attacker. And by observing the attacker, the branch, the attacker can directly determine whether your exponent is 0 or 1. And if you know RSA, you know that is very bad because that allows the attacker to basically then decrypt arbitrary messages. And how would you leak this? Another side channel classic, flush and reload, which does this via shared memory. So if you assume you have this crypto library, it's somewhere in shared memory, right? So this branch that you attack lies somewhere in shared memory that both you and your victim can access. And when the victim accesses this branch, it enters the cache, right? So they are both accessing these shared libraries, the attacker and the victim, and when they access it, it enters the cache. So what you basically do is you get rid of that code first by flushing it. There's usually instructions that do that, very convenient for side channel attackers. And then the victim runs, and depending on what the secret is, that either caches the line that you want to cache, or caches the code that you want to cache, or it doesn't cache the code that you want to cache. And now you have a controlled cache state. And afterwards, what you need to do is you need to exfiltrate this cache state. And you do that by accessing the shared library. And if it's fast, then you know it's cached. And if it's slow, then you know it's uncached and the victim didn't access. And so let's basically think about what were the basic requirements for this attack. So you need the shared library, you obviously have that with your crypto library. You need the flush, so you need some way to get stuff out of the cache, and we will see whether that exists on RISC-V. And you need a timer. And these timers exist on RISC-V, and there's even like quite a lot of them. So the ISA mandates that there needs to be like three timers that are available. There's like RD time, which is a little bit interesting to us because it's really slow. We want a fast timer, so there's RD cycle, which counts as fast as the hardware cycles go, which is nice. And then there's even something that counts retired instructions, which we will see is even nicer, because you can do even nicer attacks with that. And they are all high resolution, and they all should be accessible from user space. So for an attacker, that's a really nice baseline, right? And then case maintenance looks a little bit dire on RISC-V, so there's like no flush instruction in the base ISA, there's only fences, but there's two cool tricks in RISC-V. So first of all, there's these T-head cores, and they thought like, so this is the core that you basically saw before in the Kubernetes talks, and they were like, how about we implement this for our core? How about we make it unprivileged? So you again have this flush, so you have full control over the cache, which is nice for an attacker. I don't know who else uses that in user space, but well, it's there now. And then there's also the fence-i instruction, which doesn't say anything about the cache. It's there to synchronize the instruction stream.